Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're placing sustainability and fossil fuels in sharp focus. We'll ask, are they mutually exclusive? Our panel shares insights into how it sees energy supply and demand patterns evolving, and we'll look to the future and speculate whether emerging markets may be able to leapfrog fossil fuels altogether into a more sustainable model of energy supply, as some have claimed. Along the way, we'll talk about the relative sustainability of different energy sources, and of course, as ever on the programme, we'll mull the implications for investors. We start with UBS analyst Rudolf Lehmann. Rudolf, we're talking about sustainability and fossil fuels. There's an assumption that they're mutually exclusive, but is the picture actually rather more complex than that?
In a way that you can argue fossil fuels are not sustainable, but at least within fossil fuels there are some that are a bit less, let's say, pollutive than others. And we clearly see that the trend is already going toward that direction. So, for example, that coal is losing market share, whereas natural gas, which is the cleanest fossil fuel, is gaining some market share.
And Rudolf, is it important, therefore, to keep an eye on that bigger supply and demand picture?
Yeah, it is. And you see that especially demand is rising all the time, right? It's basically growing world population and as well the increase of living standards. We clearly see that people consume more energy through more mobility, more convenience. So from that point of view, we clearly can see demand rising. So we clearly as well need more supply. And in a way, you can argue that when it comes to some of these fossil fuel supplies, like for example in oil, we at some point as well have some constraints. Whereas natural gas, for example, is as well more abundantly available and hence as well within the fossil fuels, at least probably the one that has the longest future of them all.
Rachel Whitaker is sustainable investing strategist at UBS Wealth Management's CIO. Rachel, coming to you, let's talk a little bit about sustainability and the relative sustainability of different energy sources. Is it instructive to remember that there are grades here? It's not an absolute. It's not just about renewables.
Yes, it is. So if we're looking at the environmental sustainability of the energy supply, we're looking at a whole spectrum of possibilities and a whole spectrum of different levels of sustainability. So at the one end, you've got traditional fossil fuels like coal that are generally accepted as being unsustainable. They've been formed naturally over millions of years, so they exist in finite quantities, and when they're burned, they release carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, and that's contributing to air pollution, health impacts, and climate change. And then at the other end of the scale, we've got the generally accepted sustainable energy sources, and those are the ones that are naturally replenishing with minimal pollution, like solar and wind, and some of the less well-known ones like hydro and geothermal and biomass. But that's not to say that even the sustainable energy sources are without any negative environmental impacts, because you still have to manufacture wind turbines and solar panels, and that still requires materials and energy and water like any other manufacturing process.
Back to you, Rudolf Lehmann. I wonder, do people need to look then more subjectively at what sustainability actually means?
It depends how fundamentalistic you want to be, in a way. That if you're basically looking at it from a fundamentalistic basis, then you have to say, I mean, all the energy that we have is in a way solar. One is directly coming now, currently from the sun. Then you have wind as a derivative from solar heat, right, which in the end drives the wind system. And you have fossil fuels, which are, let's say, grown plant matters that was turned into hydrocarbons. This is finite because it takes a couple of millions of years, but it's not something we have to worry in the instant future, basically, if that's going to be, we're running out of it, right? But at the same time, it tells us as well, it has really no future in the very long term, but that in the at least short term, it's a massive transition that needs to take place. And that transition naturally will not be that quick, right? So hence we will still depend on fossil fuels, and with that we prefer cleaner ones over dirty ones.
And to your point there about transitions, a certain theory suggests many emerging markets, for example, could essentially skip the fossil fuels era and jump straight to a more sustainable model. Do you and your colleagues give much credence to that, or does that sound still rather like a pipe dream?
It's possible. I would rather hint to like what we call frontier markets, or even less developed than some of the emerging markets, because in a way you have to differentiate a little bit between so-called on-grid consumption and off-grid consumption. So basically, if you have all the infrastructure already in place to, for example, distribute electricity on via wires to be delivered to your home plug, then it's typically easiest to have some large-scale production. It's not only easiest to do, but as well just with the cheapest supply cost. On the other hand, if you don't have a grid at all, let's say in some African countries, for example, or Indian's rural areas, it's probably just cheaper not to build the grid and then basically rely on at least solutions which are for a specific house or at least a small group of houses, which in strictly speaking results in a higher cost per unit of energy, but because you don't need to make all the investment, it's still lower cost than the alternative to build up all that infrastructure. So basically, meaning this renewable energy use then is probably still attractive, right? And it's not worth to build up all the infrastructure.
Rudolf Lehmann. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at sustainability and fossil fuels from the investor perspective. Let's take our usual pass over the investor perspective next. Rachel Whitaker, on the investor side, is it about finding the best growth sectors? How do you help clients to navigate in this space?
I think from a sustainable investment perspective, what we're encouraging investors to do is not just think about these global trends, but investors, as well as governments and companies in all of these energy-intensive industries, they need to be thinking about local and social consequences of the decisions that are made relating to energy usage, as well as those global energy trends. Because as you were saying earlier, it's not a question of what is sustainable or not in absolute terms, but about which solution will be best for energy sustainability in this situation, and then how do we keep that momentum going to keep continuously improving on a global scale, and which organisations are really best positioned to take advantage of that.
Where are the real opportunities here for investors? Rudolf Lehmann, what are the implications of some of the big picture issues that we've been talking about? What dominates when you talk to clients in this space?
There are different ways to approach it. I mean, one is, for example, just to look at growth, right? Where is energy growth the highest? And we can clearly say that the highest growth is in renewable fuels, right? It's coming from a very low base, but it's growing at the highest clip. Problem is somewhat a bit a lot of capital coming into the space, which means it's good for the growth, but at the same time it slows down the returns or diminishes the return that we can expect from that one. But it's in the end somewhat the trade-off, right? Which way you want to go. Whereas if you're focusing more on fossil fuels, it's kind of a mature industry which will go away over a couple of decades, so still some time to go there, but still, which means as well this is more the approach to, for example, benefit from dividend, shareholder returns, etc., because just that growth is not there to reinvest that money which they generate, right?
Rachel Whitaker, back to you. Let's look at this from the CIO sort of house view kind of perspective. If we talk about energy usage and fossil fuels for that matter, is it always tackled by you and your colleagues from this sort of sustainability viewpoint? Is that the sort of vantage point? Is that always the angle? How do you sort of think strategically around these themes?
Well, we've reached the point where the trend towards renewables is a really critical industry driver from a financial perspective and a business perspective, and it's not just about the sustainability drivers, although that, you know, the sustainability element is one of the things that is pushing it. So this is very much an issue that all energy analysts and all investors in this space have to be thinking about. But when we think about energy sustainability from a more holistic sustainability perspective, you know, it's not just about switching to renewable sources or using less energy. Energy sustainability in the broader context and thinking about sustainable development, we're thinking about meeting the needs of everyone today without compromising the needs of future generations. And so that has to include both the environmental and the social factors. So as well as thinking about where the energy is coming from, we also need to think about how and where it's used. So from a social perspective, we actually need to be making more energy available to the, you know, the billion or more people in developing countries who don't have access to power or to electricity, which is, you know, severely limiting their living standards and educational prospects and so on. And we need to make cleaner forms of energy available to the almost 3 billion people who only have access to very basic dirty fuels for things like cooking, which has severe impacts on health. And then in the developed world populations, we're thinking about that transition to renewables, but also thinking about how we use energy more efficiently, you know, like smart meters in the home, and ideally encouraging lifestyle choices to try and rein in energy usage. But I think with the developments in technology, that's a bit of a pipe dream at the moment.
Rudolf, can we delve into a bit more of the background? Maybe talk a bit about some of the numbers. Let's talk about market shares here. We've already talked a little about the variation within fossil fuels and the influence that obviously renewable energy is having on this market. Maybe you can give us a sense of how that, yeah, that energy pie is divvied up at the moment and how you anticipate it changing.
So if you look at the market share by energy source as of today, we basically have about a third of the consumption coming from oil. Oil is primarily consumed for transportation use, cars, ships, airplanes, whereas we have coal with about 27%, so about a quarter, and natural gas just below that, 22%. Both of them are primarily used for electricity production, so turning that heat from burning natural gas and coal into steam generators, which then again produce electricity. And then we have 5% nuclear energy, which is low CO2 emission, but not necessarily sustainable in terms of that we might have a waste issue, and as well that's basically it. The input into producing nuclear energy is mined, and hence as well not endless. And then we have currently 14% is actually renewable energy or energy provided from different kinds of renewable sources, which includes the largest part of that is hydroelectricity, right? So all that pie, if you look at it, two-thirds more or less are used for heating or electricity, one-third for transportation, the oil bit. Now, if you go forward to 2040, that will shift somewhat. Oil will go down to about a quarter, still mostly transportation use. And the biggest drop, so to say, will be coal, which we still see to be around 20%, but much lower than today's 27% of the pie, which overall, of course, grows over that time. And then we have natural gas growing from 22 to 25%. And then renewables, to come to that, is basically up 50%, right? Going from 14% of the share to 20% share on a larger pie. So clearly here, that's what's showing the highest growth.
And Rudolf, I wonder too about how varied the global per capita consumption picture is. Perhaps, you know, if we compare patterns between markets, say the United States with Europe, China, and so on.
About a third of overall energy consumption is oil, and that translates on average per capita 766 liters per year. So basically, the average listener consumes 766 liters of oil every year, and twice that again with other energy consumption, but of course that's very unequally distributed. So for example, if in the US it's nearly 10 liters of oil per day. That's only oil consumption. Whereas in China, we are at 1.4 liters and India at 0.6 liters. So while we are not assuming that the U.S. oil consumption should be basically the future for global consumption, because the U.S. is consuming quite a lot of the oil. But if you just look at the difference, there is still quite some upside, let's say, need, so to say, for these developing markets to move on. It doesn't necessarily need to be just oil. It can be a replacement for it as well, but it just shows, puts it into context, the energy challenge in a way that we are facing.
Thanks, Rudolf. So that's a snapshot of the global demand for energy. And that demand is such that a total drive for sustainability in energy provision remains presumably rather impractical for now. Indeed, this is but one of a number of factors that complicate sustainability opinion, I suppose, isn't it, Rachel Whittaker?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot depends on the specific situation and what's going to be the most sustainable energy solution in that particular region, in that particular community. And so with, you know, I mentioned natural gas, and although some people do see it as a really useful transitional solution, others believe that some of the environmental and safety risks associated with extracting natural gas, like the significant water use and the somewhat controversial process of fracking, make it just as bad as oil and coal. And then you have other options like nuclear energy, for example, which is another one that really splits sustainability opinion. And some consider it as a potential solution to all of our energy problems, providing cheap and plentiful clean energy, technically not renewable, but radioactive elements and the technology could provide virtually infinite fuel sources. And it's used very widely in certain countries like France. But as yet, we haven't solved that problem of how to deal with nuclear waste. And the risks associated with accidents with nuclear energy are extremely high.
And that's Rachel Whittaker bringing us to the end of this 184th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at the website monocle.com or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.